Does manual treasury management and operations have your crypto business stuck in the slow lane? Scale up and speed ahead with Fireblocks, the number one platform for crypto operations and trading pros that makes custody, settlement, and rebalancing quick and easy. Visit Fireblocks.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Coinbase Prime, an integrated solution that provides institutional investors with an advanced trading platform, secure custody, and Prime services to manage all of their crypto assets in one place. Futuristic companies like Tesla and MicroStrategy have used Coinbase's comprehensive investing platform to execute some of the largest trades in the industry. Learn more by visiting coinbase.com/prime to get started today. I'd also like to give a shout out to CrossRiver. Whether you're a crypto exchange, NFT marketplace, or wallet, CrossRiver's integrated API-based platform provides the payment solutions you need to grow. A CryptoFin Industry Award winner and an early partner for companies like Coinbase, CrossRiver's tech stack supports crypto partners and enables real-time money movement for consumers. Welcome to a new world of crypto-friendly banking at crossriver.com/crypto. All opinions expressed by hosts and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and not necessarily those of the Blocks. Podcast guests may have taken positions in the assets or other matters discussed in this podcast. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. For full terms, visit theblockcrypto.com/terms-service. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Frank Chaparro, editor at large at The Block, and we've got a very exciting episode for you today, folks. I know there's a lot going on in the market. Let's get right to it. Joining us on the other side of the mic today are my guests, Matt Stover, CEO at MG Stover, and Jack McDonald, chair and CEO at PolySign. So, gentlemen, thanks for being on the show. If you don't know about PolySign, it's a digital asset custodian and trading infrastructure firm, which acquired fund administrator MG Stover back in April. Matt, Jack, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the show today.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
So how's business?
I think it's a very exciting time in the industry. Obviously, it's been a challenging market. We've been quite active over the last month integrating the businesses. And so PolySign, as you mentioned, Frank, we started 4 years ago. Arthur Brito, our founder, one of the three co-founders of Ripple, with a vision of building out an infrastructure company. And we focused first on custody. It's my background coming from a TradFi world and other board members, but always had a view towards adding other services. And the opportunity for us to partner with Matt and to acquire the phenomenal business that he built, being, we were talking about the other day down at Consensus, really the OG of fund admin for digital assets, was an opportunity we couldn't pass up. Could not be more excited. And it's been really interesting and exciting and enlightening for me to be meeting the legacy Stover clients with Matt over the last month, and at the same time going through this market turmoil. And I think what we're seeing is a high degree of confidence and conviction remaining with the client base. We're less mature in terms of the traction. We launched our custody business, a New York qualified custodian, back in Q4. So we're still ramping up, adding clients. We can talk about kind of the trajectory of that business. But we're also, you know, getting the benefit from talking to the existing clients. And they're using this opportunity to build. You know, we believe that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. It's a real opportunity, if you're well-funded as we are, to really take a longer-term view and to build in downtimes like this. And so that's what we're focused on doing.
Matt, you want to share your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the things that I would add to it is the appetite for new products being launched by existing clients or prospective clients is not slowed down. If anything, you know, people see it as a buying opportunity. They, you know, maybe not that they were waiting for this, but they would, you know, perfect time to launch a fund when things are kind of down and there's a lot of opportunity out there. You know, from our perspective, with demand not being down, we're very active on hiring people. And, you know, I started the business 2007, you know, before the financial crisis. And during that downtime, you know, we found some really good talent of people to acquire. So, you know, hopefully we'll continue to grow the businesses, both on, you know, clients as well as hiring more people. And like Jack said, we're not slowing down. We're building for the future, and the appetite for our service offering has not slowed.
Got it. How have the needs of the clients changed over the past, let's say, month in the midst of the Luna blow up and then more recently Celsius sort of having its incident, if you will?
I think the biggest thing is just risk management. You know, not that they weren't taking it seriously before, but there's a lot of focus on counterparty due diligence.
Yes.
From the investor perspective, I think they're asking a lot of questions about, you know, what's in your book, what's your exposure to certain coins or to certain, you know, exchanges or custodians. We saw a lot of this in the financial crisis of flight to quality, right?
Yes.
So you're seeing the exact same thing happening in digital assets, which in my mind is what we need, right? Everything was so frothy. Everything was, you know, going in the right direction. So not that you want these things to happen, but it definitely shakes out some players in the space and makes you kind of rethink about your business. So I think there's a lot of focus on risk management and controls and counterparty risk right now.
I love that you said that because it dovetails perfectly off of the most recent recording that we did with Martin Green at Cambrian Asset Management. And he talked about this topic, the seemingly unsexy topic of risk management, but it's very important. And I think that it's become more important as a result of everything that we've seen happen. And Martin was talking about how one of the big, you know, changes that they had in the most recent quarter was sitting down, having these meetings about counterparty risk, really diving deep into, you know, whether the venues they're trading on have proper parameters around their own risk systems. I think there's a common storytelling thread to be drawn from the wormhole hack, UST, Celsius, you know, even some institutional participants. Have they done that due diligence, that proper risk management? What are you guys seeing?
But to me, it reminds me in the TradFi world of what we saw in part around the whole Madoff episode. And I'm not drawing a direct correlation between the fraud of Madoff and in this industry, but what it did teach the industry, and these were proven seasoned professionals, is that you have to dig a little bit deeper and ask more thoughtful questions when you're choosing your service providers. We're getting more and more questions that you would have expected folks to ask earlier, I think, in the process of choosing service providers around, for example, on the custody side of the business, the difference between segregated accounts and omnibus accounts, the questions within the contract around what would happen in the unlikely event of a bankruptcy, are your assets protected? We're getting more and more questions around our policies and procedures around AML and KYC. And I think investors have had a bit of a wake-up call when headlines about some presumably trusted counterparties and solid firms that are having shortcomings or gaps that are starting to appear. And so they're getting the pressure from their investors to ask different questions and to, in some ways, justify, if you will, the service providers that they're using. And so they're doing a little bit more work in understanding that service level agreement, the contractual obligations, where the liability sits, what responsibility our clients have with us as the service providers. And we value that partnership and that level of dialogue, but it's taken on new meaning, I find, in the last 6 weeks.
They're giving you a little bit more work.
They're giving us a little more work, but I think they're also giving us a little more respect in terms of the role that we play and a different level of desire to really engage with us. It's very germane, particularly in the fund administration business, which Matt can speak of more, of really being a true partnership where we rely upon the data and the information that managers give us to do the work that we're being hired to do. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I would add is, you know, we've been, you know, servicing crypto funds for a long time, early days of 2014, but it didn't really take off until 16, 17. But, you know, there was no infrastructure put in place for this new asset class. And, you know, Jack mentions that we were the OGs, and you know, a lot of that was scary because we were pioneers in building, you know, what was best practice for the control environment. And I think a lot of those things that we've built have really paid off today. And everything that we were trying to build to service a dedicated crypto fund is replicated by what we are servicing a long short equity fund, right? So we wanted those same controls in place and really push our clients to institutionalize their firm and really kind of make just a sound offering for our clients. And, you know, we've been working on that for a long time. And I think a lot of that has paid off. I think we have a long way to go. I think there's still a lot of gaps when clients do or investors do, you know, due diligence on the space. There's a long way that we can come. But you know, 4 years ago, we didn't have a lot of qualified custodians. Now, you know, there are some in the space and, you know, couldn't be happier with partnering with, you know, PolySign and their offering with Standard Custody, that all of this is moving in the right direction. And I think that institutionalizing this asset class will only make it stronger. I think there's just, it's been growing so quickly, so fast. It's been hard to build process, hard to train people, hard to build that control environment. But you know, now we'll be in that rebuilding phase to just make it stronger going forward.
It's an interesting point that you made, which is each cycle has its own sort of maturation, right? If we harken back to the days of 2018, there weren't qualified custodians. The exchanges maybe didn't have their SOC 1, SOC 2. Obviously, that infrastructure exists now. Now, post this cycle, we can call it the Luna cycle, if you will, the different firms operating across the space are probably going to take counterparty risk management more seriously, or risk management in general more seriously, and then we'll keep maturing, so on and so forth. In general, was it counterparty risk that was the most unexplored risk, something that maybe firms didn't pay close enough attention to over the past, you know, let's say year to date or over the past year? And what other risks maybe are people not paying enough attention to or hadn't paid enough attention to?
I'd say a couple things. One, you know, greed and fear drives markets. And when markets are up and to the right, it's human nature sometimes to not ask the difficult questions or to further explore where maybe something doesn't feel quite right, but you've got a bit of a herd mentality. They're investing in a certain asset or using a certain platform. Because one of the common refrains I've heard from Luna, Terra, all these pundits are coming out of the shadows saying, "I told you so," or "I saw this coming." Well, I've heard in the last 48 hours about Celsius. That was too good to be true. It was only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's part of the risk, is that people may have known that, you know, getting 19% APR was too good to be true, but I couldn't turn it down because it's helping me grow my fund and attract investors, et cetera. Keep in mind also, you know, a lot of this industry has been fueled by the retail investor who may not have the wherewithal, the experience, or the tools to really scrutinize the different players in the space. But from an institutional standpoint, I think there was a little bit of FOMO going on. And it's also been a nascent industry coming up. So there weren't the type of alternative service providers that would exist in TradFi. The other thing I'd say, and I'll let Matt, you know, give his view, is that I think one of the still unknown, or I should say known unknowns out there and risks for the industry that's still holding back more wide scale adoption is the lack of regulatory clarity. And I think the events over the last 6 months, just to pick a time frame, and we're starting to see this with the proposed legislation out of Senator Gillibrand, is that we as an industry need more regulatory clarity and guardrails so that we can manage the business. It's challenging building an infrastructure company when you don't really know what the guardrails are or what the kind of rules of the road are when building. And I think the more clarity we get will help the industry advance to the next level.
So, Matt, do you think that the risks were known, but maybe ignored? Like, do these firms have the risk parameters to have maybe seen the potential for, in the case of Luna, a depegging event occurring?
I think, you know, and I don't speak a lot of my clients about whether or not they got it right or wrong on the assets that they chose or the counterparty risk. But one thing that I was thinking a lot of, and I think, you know, when you think of digital assets, there's been a lot of correlation back to the early days of the internet, or, you know, the dot-coms, where you're going to have a lot of winners and losers, and that's just kind of expected. I think a lot of our clients knew this is a very risky asset class, and the investors that allocated didn't put a lot of their net worth in. There's very small percentage of their net worth that would go into this investment that if it went to zero, that was kind of expected. So there's not this, you know, huge rush of redemptions. Everyone's kind of saying, well, we kind of were expecting a lot of this to potentially occur. I think what the more recent events has made me think a lot more about, you know, 2008 and the financial crisis, you know, what happened with the primary reserve fund and the depegging there, what happened with Lehman Brothers and the liquidity crisis that a lot of these financial institutions had, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and you still saw it, like there was a lot of people putting a lot of leverage on a lot of these exchanges that were offering a ton of leverage. And you know, you got to keep in mind that they're not, you know, FCMs or, you know, broker dealers. There's no net capital requirements. You know, they're not public companies, so you can't really see their balance sheet. So there was just a lot of faith that yes, they can provide liquidity and, you know, we aren't going to get over levered. So I've shifted my focus more on like the, you know, what we've learned from the financial crisis to kind of apply it to digital assets, because I think there's a lot of, you know, similarities around, you know, those lessons learned that we can apply going forward. But I think others are probably thinking the same thing.
Mm. So do you think that maybe Luna was the Bear Stearns moment and then perhaps Celsius is the Lehman moment, or is it not as catastrophic?
I think the better correlation is probably the primary reserve fund, the money market fund that held Lehman Brothers commercial paper, right? That depegged that money market. So that's probably a better correlation. But, you know, Celsius is probably closer to the Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers, where just not being able to provide that liquidity to their clients.
In the same vein, though, I would also add, I think when Bear and Lehman were going down, I think there was a broader, obviously the industry was significantly more mature than the digital asset industry, but there were real concerns. The Fed called together everybody that the whole financial system may break here in a profound way. And I was actually thinking this morning that, you know, what happened with Luna and then Celsius, touch wood, this industry is still holding on a relative basis, you know, stability here. The system is not breaking. And, you know, it's obviously an extremely volatile asset class, even in the best of times. And when it's challenged and you get more pressure on the system, I think eyes are watching to see how exchanges hold up, how custodians hold up, how, you know, the market data flows, et cetera. And it feels to me like the system is doing what it's supposed to be doing right now. There are some corner case situations, obviously, but I don't get the sense yet that there is that profound structural concern that the system may break.
Yeah. Is there contagion across the system? It sounds like
doesn't
you would
like
say,
it.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel
like
it to me. Because, you know, the whole stablecoin conversation, right? Everyone says, well, those were algorithmic stablecoins. Very, very different than a fiat-backed stablecoin. As opposed to all stablecoins now are at risk of depegging. I didn't get that sense.
Having trouble keeping pace with the crypto boom? When your business is scaling up and your portfolio is growing, you don't want to waste precious time on manual treasury management or settling and rebalancing. Fireblocks can handle that for you with smart, scalable solutions for your crypto business, along with industry-leading security and expertise. They'll take care of the back end so you can focus on the big picture. Visit fireblocks.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Coinbase Prime, an integrated solution that provides institutional investors with an advanced trading platform, secure custody, and Prime services to manage all their crypto assets in one place. Coinbase Prime fully integrates crypto trading and custody on a single platform and gives clients the best all-in pricing in their network using their proprietary smart order router and algorithmic execution. Futuristic companies like Tesla and MicroStrategy have already used Coinbase's comprehensive investing platform to execute some of the largest trades in the industry. Build a unified investment portfolio with one of the most trusted names in crypto. Learn more by visiting coinbase.com/prime to get started today. This episode is brought to you by Cross River. Building the next big thing in crypto? Then it's time to get your fiat on and off ramp solution from Cross River. Whether you're a crypto exchange, NFT marketplace, or wallet, Cross River's integrated API-based platform provides the payment solutions you need to grow. Cross River is powering the future of financial services. A CryptoFin Industry Award winner and an early partner for companies like Coinbase, Cross River's tech stack supports crypto partners and enables real-time money movement for consumers. Welcome to a new world of crypto-friendly banking. Request your fiat on and off-ramp solution now at crossriver.com/crypto. Now the R word is creeping up a lot. That's the other big difference, right? We could be heading into a recession. People are saying it more and more frequently. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong said that a recession being on the horizon was part of the reason why they made the quote-unquote prudent decision to lay off 18% of their staff. This is different from previous cycles, and I know you guys have seen them. This is kind of the first time, at least over a longer period of time, where macro is in the driver's seat and a crypto winter is happening in the same or in conjunction with a lot of macroeconomic uncertainty.
That's right. I think all eyes are watching. We get asked the question a lot, as I'm sure you do, you know, what's up with the correlation between crypto and the broader markets? I thought crypto was supposed to be this perfect hedge against inflation. And if you look at the last 6 months since inflationary concerns have risen and the markets have tanked, so too have the crypto markets tanked. I think it's a question really of time frame. And should we enter into a recession, will there be this uncorrelated return with cryptos, or will it follow suit like other assets and trade along, you know, with the broader markets? And I think the jury is still out over the medium to long term there.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting for sure. I think it lives between these two worlds, right? It has the potential to be an inflation asset, and sometimes it reacts. It has historically reacted to some inflation headlines in a positive way. And sometimes it hasn't. It's still kind of in its maturation as an asset. It's finding itself. It's like a teenager, so to speak. And who knows what we'll see once it comes out of its adolescence. But I guess it keeps it interesting for people like me and market participants. Definitely haven't been getting as much sleep as usual over the past few weeks. But that's okay. I'm a big napper. The naps help.
There you go. Well, I think there's also a broader theme, and we certainly talk to our investors and our clients about the broader digital asset ecosystem. So taxonomy matters here. Mm. I think of cryptocurrencies in the pure sense as a subset of digital assets. And our business is building infrastructure really for institutions to access digital assets. And so if you move beyond just cryptocurrencies, non-sovereign backed virtual currencies, and start to think about a tokenized interest in a real estate building or a fractional interest in a VC fund or a digital representation of IP held elsewhere, like an NFT, and all of the operating systems that need to be built, i.e. Web3, to support that migration and evolution, I think we continue to be in an extremely exciting part of the rebuild, the rewiring of a whole new capital market system. And yes, the crypto markets are going to have its highs and lows, but the long-term trend is definitely our friend. And we think about that, Matt and I do, in terms of the products, the services that we need to build, where our clients are investing. You know, there's a lot of illiquid VC investors that the legacy Stover business services, and they have a longer-term view about this whole new operating system and the technologies and the companies that they want to invest in who are going to help advance that vision.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is like we get to see both the liquid and illiquids on the investment side. And there's so much capital still flowing into the private companies building infrastructure around this new asset class. And, you know, for our combined companies, you know, we're still in that building phase. You know, MG Stover was always behind on hiring, probably a little behind on tech, even though we were the leader, we always felt like we were several steps behind, right? So, you know, we're still actively hiring and we're building tech, and we can see that vision of where we're headed, because that's the demand from our clients and from our investors. And I think it's just, you know, having that longer term view can be challenging when it seems like it's a falling knife right now. But, you know, once you get past that, you can still see that the infrastructure is there. We just got to keep building and stay the course.
Got it. So, Jack, when you talk about the difference between what you're seeing on the private side versus the public side, what exactly do you mean by that? Are you talking about the capital that's entering the private side is higher than that of the liquid side?
I don't know if it's necessarily higher, but we've got both liquid funds, hedge funds, that are trading more the tokens and the coins. And then we have venture capital funds that are investing in private companies or investing in the protocols that eventually might issue a token, right? So we see a lot of capital on what I would consider the private side investing in the infrastructure, right? That might not be trading right now. So you don't really see the price fluctuations of that. Now, some of the private deals have been very frothy and some of the valuations have definitely come down and will continue to reset a little bit. But, you know, capital is still flowing. And what Jack was saying about they have a longer time horizon, they're still building. They're not shutting down these projects. They still have capital to deploy. So when people are building, you know, it will take a little bit of time for those, you know, investments to materialize or the use cases to materialize.
One thing that I've been pretty surprised about, I'm not surprised that crypto prices are down, but I am slightly surprised at how hard the long tail has come crashing down. You look at some of these coins, down 90% from their all-time highs. I would have thought, and maybe this is because, you know, I like crypto, I don't want it to die. I thought that there would be a floor created by some of the clients you're referring to that have raised over the past year, in some instances, billions of dollars, but it hasn't really created a floor on the token price side. Why do you think that is? I guess part of it is because much of that capital is being raised to deploy into venture and not liquid strategies. That would be the obvious answer, but is there any more color you can share there?
I agree with what you just proposed. I would also argue that if you're going to stay in the liquid side of the market, you may be moving some of your funds to the more liquid names. So the last thing you want to do is get held out. And when there's very illiquid altcoins that are being traded, you know, that volatility is your friend or your enemy. And so a lot of the price suppression that you've seen, I think, is just a lack of a bid. And when you have such illiquid trading going on, that the pricing swings can be much more severe. And some people just say, hey, this was a, you know, a token that I either got through an investment or that I was investing in a more speculative way, and I'm going to maybe double down and just keep my money safe, quote unquote, in more Bitcoin, Ethereum-like assets and no longer chase that tail out where the upside was greater and now I'm seeing the downside, you know, come crashing down. So there's just, you know, bid wanted for some of those assets, I think.
So what do you think happens next?
Well, I think one thing, you know, it's going to, the wobbly knees, there's going to be people that fall, right? And there's going to be businesses that were not well-funded, that didn't have the right business plan. Maybe it's just not the right timing, right? You saw this in dot-com where, you know, good ideas just poorly run or maybe not the right time with the working capital. But I think you'll see prominent players survive this and there'll be a lot more rebuilding. Eventually, investors will come back, right? Once things kind of settle down, you know, so I've got a lot of conviction in blockchain technology and digital assets. Everything's becoming more digitized. How we get there is maybe untold yet, but we're really excited about where we're at and the clients that we have. And, you know, as it pertains to an investable asset class, I think we're doing so much that we're helping, you know, these fund managers and the investors that there's still a lot of interest. I just think it's going to take a little bit more time to play out, but it could take us a while to get through this.
Yeah. Is there any concern that you're going to see, you know, hopefully not your clients, but there is a potentiality that they did get caught flat-footed and now they have to retrench, exit. Maybe they need to sort of close up shop. How do you position the firm to get over a hump like that if you were to see maybe on the longer tail of funds start to close?
Well, I think Matt mentioned it earlier. It's the flight to quality works in a number of different ways. You know, we've focused on building a business for institutions, number one. Number two, a lot of scrutiny on the intake side for the legacy Stover business and really wanting to do their best to stick with the winners, the more institutional grade, the firms that have infrastructure to support the operational side. On the custody front, we're heavily regulated by the New York Department of Financial Services. The type of clients that we're bringing on board there are all fully vetted institutions who are very cognizant of the different regulatory compliance requirements that we have. And so I think you, from an investment standpoint in the business, we both come from experience living through different cycles, managing businesses through ups and downs. So I think we take a very cautious long-term view. We want to build the type of technology, systems, reporting, et cetera, that our clients are going to value and that help them with the risk management that they're increasingly interested in, the reporting that their investors want to have, and continue to have a white glove service in terms of the client contact that we have, that we pick up the phone, we talk to our clients, we understand what they need today, where their business is going, and we want to partner with them in good times and bad. It's easy to be a good service provider when things are going great. I think it's harder when the emotions are high and when the businesses of our clients are under strain. And we will lose some clients. It's inevitable in market downturns where some folks just don't make it. But we're well funded and we have a long-term view that this industry will recover. It feels to me the other C word is capitulation. It feels like in the market, we're kind of getting to the puke fest stage, it feels like to me. I don't think it's going to be a meteoric snap back here, but I think we're going to have a slow and steady climb out. There will be some volatility along the way, but it feels like there's been a big reset and we're closer to a bottom here than we've been in a long time.
Yeah, certainly think that's the case. I wouldn't say that's the case for equities, though. I think crypto might be ahead of the curve in terms of it just gets there more quickly, I've noticed.
Oh, for sure.
Right? There's just a sense that it kind of just draws itself right to that magnet because information, I think, flows more quickly as well, and that helps. And it's a bit more transparent. I mean, you don't have hedge funders in traditional finance like pontificating on Twitter about, you know, XYZ topic, but that is the case in crypto. And, you know, you look at something like the Three Arrows rumors circulating all morning today. I mean, it just happens within a blink of an eye, but at the same time, there is a double-edged sword in as much as, like my grandmother used to say, a lie can spread around the world in the time it takes the truth to tie its shoes. And so you have to be careful for that. So is there a specific catalyst? I feel like it just, you know, wait and see. Macro needs to play out. But it seems like this is, like you said, we just, you know, sort of need to grind on.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So everybody talks about building in the bear, but what do you guys got cooking under the hood? What should your clients expect? Are you moving into any new verticals?
I mean, we're hiring a lot. We opened a new office in Halifax to cover our clients a little bit more 24/7. We're hopefully coming out with a new product on the digital asset accounting front soon. We've been working on this for over a year and we've been using it internally, but we'd like to get some exposure to our clients and really get that out. So we're really excited about that. But really the focus, and Jack mentioned this, is just, you know, really have that white glove service. Let's take care of our clients. Let's make sure that we've got really good service, that we have timely and accurate reporting. You know, we'll continue to build partnerships with the ecosystem of digital assets to make it stronger. The other thing that I think that we didn't really touch on, but that appetite from existing asset managers. A lot of our clients that came out of crypto were more crypto native people that really understood the blockchain technology that got into the asset management business. Most of our conversations these days are with existing asset managers that are building digital asset products or putting digital assets into their portfolio. So that to us is very exciting, different types of conversations, but that just proves to us that this is an asset class that we want to focus on. And there's still, you know, a big appetite from their investors and very large institutions. So I think those are the three primary things that we're focused on the admin side, is really just hiring, keeping the level of service up. That technology that I talked about on the portfolio accounting side is really cool. And we want to have a coming out party later this year on that. And then just this focus on, you know, the existing asset managers.
I'd also add, from just a precedent standpoint, and part of the strategic imperative behind this partnership that we did in the acquisition of MG Stover, was to really build an asset servicing firm for digital assets. There's precedence in TradFi with the global custodial banks, the BNYs, the State Streets, et cetera, that have custody at the core, and then build this surround sound of other services to service their institutional clients. We have custody through Standard Custody. We now have fund administration. We'll build out middle office services. A lot of time and resources will go into building out the technology and the reporting that Matt referenced, and also working with partners that we have in that ecosystem broadly, whether it's staking providers like Figment and BlockDaemon. We work very closely with Cowen Digital, who led our most recent round on the trading side of the house. And so we're looking for strategic partners that we can have to complement the services that we have. We're not trying to be everything to everybody, but we understand that where institutional clients can consolidate relationships and be serviced in a best in breed sort of way, that it can make a lot of sense. And there can be some real synergies operationally, financially, et cetera, for doing that.
Large asset managers, if you're listening, that's the pitch. There you have the pitch. So the conversations you're having increasingly are including folks from the more traditional asset management world. Has that slowed down as a result of recent market movements, or is it still, are they getting it a little more skittish, or are they maybe thinking of launching a fund or an ETF product maybe, or ETP, ETN, and now maybe are reconsidering it, or are they still, you know, out for the races?
I think the conversations are continuing with the same pace, and if anything, they've been increasing over the last year, for sure. Now, part of it might just be our own evolution, Cowen coming on board, we're meeting all their clients. This most recent Series C raise with Soros and Brevin Howard coming in, like the type of folks that we're talking to, the traditional asset managers, are making bets in the space. I think undoubtedly the market events over the last couple of months will cause certain investors to make sure that they're really crossing all of their T's and dotting all their I's before they step in. So maybe it's a half step back before another step forward. But the long-term view that these traditional asset managers make in investing in this sort of way, we think is really unaffected by the recent market downturns. They're taking a long-term view, and they've done the work, you know, to make these decisions.
That's good. There's a bid. There's a little bid in the market for us.
I think that's right.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Is this the first time you guys have done a podcast together?
Yeah, it's the first joint one, sure. Yeah.
First joint one. I'll take what I can get in this market. Gentlemen, thank you so much for stopping by the show. Where can our listeners learn more about what you're working on?
Well, we're in the process of combining our websites and whatnot, but mgstover.com or standardcustody.com, you can find us on Twitter, or, you know, they can go and listen to the podcast on the block and find us that way. Thanks again for having us, Frank.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks so much. Talk to you guys soon. The Scoop will be back for you again with another great guest, or maybe two guests like we did today. Have a great day.